It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley,
Tim Coker,
Tim Mattson,
and we're all here except for Isaac. I couldn't get the lazy bum out of bed, you know, and for today's podcast, guys, he would have been a perfect input, because one of the things we're going to do on this podcast is we're going to kind of review the Deadpool movie, and I will tell you right off the bat here that there were some moments watching that movie with my son that I was uncomfortable.
No.
I bet.
And I would like to have heard his point of view on that, but he's a lazy bum. Or either
didn't
that, or
he cosplay as Deadpool one year.
No.
Oh, I thought
he hadn't got the costume together for that yet. He did Deathstroke, and he's done Scarlet Spidey. And I keep saying, all you got to do is combine those two.
Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's one of his plans. And but once we got to go into cons and seeing everybody else's Deadpool, it's like, eh, it's done. But anyway, let's do this. Let's talk about this movie, Deadpool. I'll start this out because I'm a huge fan of Deadpool. I've been into Deadpool ever since Liefeld created it. I was into it because someone said I need to read X-Men comics. And I read Deadpool, and I'm trying to think. Basically, he made character, or you know, made cameos, if you will, in some of the earlier, and he wasn't really as wisecracking as he is now, and it was a cool concept for a hero, and also he did a little wisecracking, but not much. It was basically along the same lines that Spider-Man does the wisecracking during his battles, and so it was kind of along that, and I'm like, okay, I, being a fan of Spider-Man, I like this guy, but he didn't quite have his own comic at the time. There were like some mini runs and stuff like this, and then someone else took over, and honestly, I don't know the creator that took over, but they let Liefeld go from the Deadpool comics, which I'm glad, because finally Deadpool has some feet, and which is one of the things that bugged me. But anyway, he, all intents and purposes, Liefeld created Deadpool. That's the guy behind it. That's the mastermind. But anyway, then he started becoming more and more hilarious, and to where the fourth wall breaking became more and more prominent, and the humor, and it just really started coming out. Now, the recent issues of Deadpool, they're written by comedian Brian Posehn, and I have loved these issues, because Brian Posehn, being a comedian that he is, you guys familiar with Brian Posehn?
Well, that name sounds very familiar.
He
was on Mr. Show, that's right.
Yeah, and he's got that sense of humor that I think fit in with Deadpool, and I've got a few of the comics. In fact, I got a couple of comics signed by him.
Woo!
it's like, you know, I always enjoyed his humor anyway. When Tom Goes to the Mayor, I think, was one of the Comedy Central TV shows he is on. And so I was like, I've enjoyed his humor. And then when he wrote Deadpool, it started getting really weird. Like, they had things like all the presidents coming back to life and Deadpool having to kill zombie presidents. And, I mean, he really went all out in weirdness. And it really started getting a little more ultra-violent, too. So knowing all that, expecting all that history into one movie, I was expecting a letdown. And also knowing that Fox was doing the movie. But I will tell you what.
That's the biggest mark against it right there going into it.
Exactly. It really is.
And let's not forget his appearance in the Wolverine.
Oh, yes.
That was the biggest black mark, or the biggest mark against it, in my opinion, was that we had already seen Ryan Reynolds in that character, and it sucked.
Yes.
Strike one.
Yep.
And Fox Pictures, strike two. And, yeah, well, see, and with that Wolverine Origins movie, or what, you know, with Deadpool, when I first heard Ryan Reynolds cast as Deadpool in that, I'm like, oh, that's going to rock, because Ryan Reynolds has got that snarky humor that's just perfect for it. And they sewed his mouth shut. But anyway.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and so I was like, what? Okay. So, yeah, I was in for a letdown. But I'll tell you what, from the moment the 20th Century Fox logo went away and Angel of the Morning started playing, I started giggling. Then those wacky credits.
Those credits were amazing.
Oh, my God. So I'm funny. Laughing my butt off, you know, directed by an asshat, you know, all that other, you know, it's like, this is just, and then going on, I was, when that movie was over, like I said, there were some moments I was uncomfortable sitting with my teenage son.
That was the quickest way to let you know what type of movie you were in for.
Oh,
those credits were perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know, I would be insanely curious to hear what they had to go through, because, I mean, that's all unionized, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to do opening credits like that without actually using the actors and producers and all those actual names – that surprised the hell out of me. I was like, wow, whoever made this movie has some real leverage.
Yeah, exactly. Leverage or something. Maybe just
all through the credits, I was sitting there thinking that okay, the real credits are going to come later.
Yeah.
But yeah, me too.
But they didn't. And we were enjoying. I mean, and that's the thing. The whole movie, from the beginning all the way to even the end credits and the post-credit scene. Okay, yeah. No spoilers here because everybody should have seen it by now, but that Ferris Bueller end credit scene was like the perfect. Now, there's only one thing I think would have made this movie better, the Stan Lee cameo. I thought, okay, yeah, funny, haha, but it could have been better.
It could have been better.
Well, let's be honest, I've never seen a Stan Lee cameo that wowed me. They're all obligatory, but...
True.
They really are. To be honest, it's time to... lay that to rest, to be honest.
You've said that before.
I have.
So we've said for years, right?
Yeah, every time he does one.
That's the tiredest thing about these films is it's no longer unique. It's no longer funny. It's only, okay, and there it is. You know? All right, we got that out of the way. Now we can go back to the movie. I'm sorry. I love Stan Lee for what he did for pop culture and his hand in helping create some of the greatest characters around, but you know, I'm sorry, we don't need him in any more movies. He needs to go, or at the very least, they need to treat it like a Hitchcock cameo.
Yeah,
it's just he walks by.
Yeah.
in a frame, and you know he's not part of what's going on. He just happens to be in the background somewhere.
Yeah.
I blame Kevin Smith and Mallrats for this.
Yeah,
seriously, that was the first movie that really celebrated Stan Lee and made him into this character in the movie, and they worshipped him as a god, and that I think kind of set events in motion that led to what we're seeing today, but that's just my theory.
You got a point there.
To be fair, Stan Lee has had a high opinion of himself for as long as he's been creating comics.
Well, coming from a guy that, I have a bucket list of two people that I want to meet, and we just mentioned both of them, Kevin Smith and Stan Lee. I would just love to sit down and talk with both of those guys just for a little while, and not necessarily at a con situation, you know, where, here's your picture, here, sign here, okay, bye.
Yeah.
You know, I want to actually sit down and talk with them for, you know, a good half hour each. Those are the two guys on my bucket list, if you will. And I don't mind his cameos. They don't bother me. I always look at it as, the guy's 90-something years old. He's about ready to go anyway. Give him his last hurrah.
Well, you guys are going to be sorry when he's gone.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I will be sorry when he's gone, but I won't be sorry when he's not in films anymore.
Right. So, but I will say the cameo in Deadpool, they really should have done something, you know, hey, you're Stan Lee, you know, something like that. That would have been perfect. I just thought the strip club thing was, you know,
it was weak.
Yeah. It was for all cameos. That was like one of the weakest ones I saw. I mean, I liked him as a janitor in Fantastic Four. That was cool.
I thought he was the mailman in Fantastic Four.
Oh, mailman. That's what it was. That's what it was.
He was the janitor in that first Amazing Spider-Man movie.
That's what. Okay. Yeah.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah. See, we should make a movie out of all the cameos. Cut out all the Stan Lees and just make one movie out of it. Okay, fans, get on that. So, all right, but for the rest of the movie, I mean, nonstop laughter, perfect. The action was so cool, and the camera angles on these action scenes, like him shooting three bad guys with one bullet left in his chamber, you know, that was freaking awesome. Gore deluxe on that three brains blowing up, you know, and that's what I expected out of the movie, and I got it. I don't know what Fox did right this time around, other than let the director and Ryan Reynolds say, hey, it's you guys' movie, you do it. Maybe that's what they did, but either way, they redeemed themselves for a little while. We'll see what happens. One of the things, we're going to bring this up later on in the podcast, is the R rating and how that's going to affect future comics. And a lot of people are coming online saying, oh, this is the first R-rated. No, it's not the first R-rated. It is the first one that is successful R-rated.
Yeah.
And yes.
We'll talk about that later on in the podcast. But in the meantime, I want to hear what you guys thought of the movie. So let's kind of go around. Let's start out with Eric Billingsley. What did you think of Deadpool?
Well, I went in with, like most of you guys, with pretty low expectations, you know, because Fox just hasn't really done much with their properties. And they've been, pardon my French, but roles with Marvel, Marvel Cinematic Universe as far as participating, whereas we've already seen with Sony, or we're about to see with Sony, that, you know, the two studios can work together and, you know, to each other's mutual benefit. But Fox just wants to be a jerk. It's like, no, I'm going to play in my own sandbox. Okay, so be it. But the quality of the films that they've been making have been so far below what MCU's been doing that, you know, I'd practically given up. But and I had never read a Deadpool comic. My only knowledge of Deadpool comes from his legions of fans who, you know, some of my good friends are big, big, big fans of his. And they've been, you know, very vocal about, oh, there needs to be a good Deadpool movie. And of course, I'm thinking of Ryan Reynolds from the Wolverine origin story. And I was like, I don't get it. Why are you so into this character? Now I know. And it, as you guys said, from the very beginning, those opening credits just like had me absolutely looking around saying, OK, we're, you know, this can't last. They're going to roll the actual credits as soon as this finishes. And they didn't. And that right there, I was like, OK, this is going to be a different kind of movie altogether. That I mean, this movie could not have been not rated R. There was that whole thing online about people trying to get a PG-13 cut made so their kids could go see it. And, some of the responses to that were just like really, really, I mean, just filthy, but downright funny. And I'm like, you know, come on. How many comic book movies are coming out every year, not just from MCU, but just in general? They're all PG or PG-13. There are plenty of movies you can take your kids to for comic book heroes. Well, the fact is that all the huge box office that are going to even the PG and PG-13 movies, most of that is coming from adults who are going without their kids or who don't have kids, like myself. I love these movies. I'm going to keep going to see them, and I spend my money for them at the movie theater and when they come out on video. So I see nothing wrong with making an occasional movie that's a comic book movie for adults, that's meant for adults and not for kids. But that said, there was a kids – the theater still had several kids in there.
There were plenty of kids in the screening I saw. Mm.
Yes, absolutely. There was one that was sitting in front of me who was laughing – well, at the jokes that I guess he got, and he couldn't have been more than like maybe 12 years old, which incidentally was about my age the first time I snuck into an R-rated movie. Hey, and I turned out all right.
12's not that young.
No.
But I remember at the end of the movie, the kid got up and he's like, oh, that was awesome. And it was so funny. At least the stuff that I got. So, but yeah, there, you know, I don't think that, I mean, if you're there with your kid, like you said, you know, it might cause some uncomfortable moments, but I think it's because it's like, oh, God, what questions am I going to be asked when we get home or on the drive home from work that you're or drive home from the theater that you're just not really prepared to answer? But, you know, Reynolds was perfectly cast in this. I mean, he's a total smartass. His delivery was great. The fact that he, you know, he had at one point thought so, well, he still thinks very highly of himself, but of course he was kind of humbled by the process that made him into a, what was he, they called him a walking avocado.
Yeah.
Although I didn't think that he was that terrible looking. I mean, obviously he I'm totally going to get in trouble for this, but he looked a little bit like, oh God, what's his name? The guy from the machete.
Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo. Oh, yes. Yeah. I got to agree with you. I think that was my only real complaint was I don't think he looked awful enough because in the comics, he looks much worse.
Yeah.
This guy was not unfuckable. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Right, right. And even though she didn't really have that big of a part to play, I mean, I love Marina Baccarin, and I always will because she was on Firefly. But damn, she still looks so freaking good. And the woman has to be in her 40s by now, or at least her late 30s. But I mean, she looks absolutely amazing.
She's got the jeans.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she wore them well.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing that a lot of people don't understand about this, at least this movie, is it's really a love story. I mean,
yeah.
Everything is set up because he's trying to protect his lady love and doesn't want her to see him at least at first. And that's what really is motivates everything that he does in this film. And so it's not just a violent gore fest, although I certainly appreciated that. the bit that they have from the that was in the trailer with the guy who's on the road sign who splattered against the road sign.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That was so great.
That was pretty great.
Yeah, there was so many great jokes. So, I mean, I had a hell of a good time. I absolutely loved it. And I cannot wait to see the second one. As long as it's written by the same people and done with the same care that they did with this one, I'm a big fan of the franchise already.
Well, let me ask you real quick, Eric. You said you never read a Deadpool comic. What do you think of the character Deadpool now? I'm curious. That was your introduction to Deadpool. What do you think of the character?
Oh, I love the character now. He's completely unlike any other comic character that I've seen or read in any of the comics. I mean, he's a merc. I like the fact that he's not this super good guy. Oh, also let me mention that I love the two, I love Colossus and who was the girl?
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
No wonder I can't remember.
That's taken from a Monster Magnet song, actually. Magnet had the song first and Marvel created the character based on that song.
Awesome.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I had no idea.
That I did not know. That's cool.
But I love the way that they use both of those characters. I love the way that they use those characters to comment and to delineate Deadpool from the rest of the X-Men universe. Mm-hmm. And probably my favorite moment in the movie was when talk about breaking the fourth wall. When he talked about the Patrick Stewart versus
McAvoy.
McAvoy. Yeah. I was like, oh, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah. These alternate timelines are confusing. So, all right. Well, I was curious as your take on the character because being that as your introduction. And honestly, I will say that being a huge fan of the character Deadpool throughout, that movie was a perfect portrayal of the comic books, if you ask me. And
that movie is a better portrayal than the comic books.
Well,
I think Deadpool overstays his welcome in the comic books. I can't read. I can't read him long term. I think he's good in short doses.
Oh man, I go into frenzy. I got trade paperbacks I pick up every so often. So sorry. All right. Well, actually, Tim Matson, let's hear your review and your comments on the movie.
First of all, Marina Bakarian is 36 years old.
Ooh.
Just looked that up.
Oh, so. Younger than I thought.
Youngin.
Yeah, she's a bit younger than I thought, too. But still absolutely flawless.
Oh, yeah.
I echo a lot of what's already been said before. I think it's a really good, really good, solid movie. Really understood the character and really got what made the character appealing to audiences. And I do think he's actually portrayed quite well in the movie by Ryan Reynolds. So I really have no complaints about it. I do think that anybody who said that absolutely must be an R rating is exaggerating. You could make a PG-13 cut out of this and not lose anything. I really think so. I think that it's an exaggeration to say that it must be an R rating or it can't be made. But having said that, I'm very pleased that they did make an R-rated superhero film and take a lot of risks with it. I think it was really smartly marketed, and I think the box office shows that the people who made this film understand the character quite handily. And I think everybody involved in this, from the actors to the director and the marketing people and the studio, understood what made this character really appealing, and they did their absolute damnedest to put butts in seats, and that really paid off for them.
Oh, can I just say one thing? The baby hand scene.
Oh, my
so
God.
Good. So good.
Yeah, that was really funny.
It's going to look so big. Anyway.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the thing about this movie. I think you're right, Tim, that they could have, but, you know, it was nice that they didn't. But go with the R rating. I mean, they could have gone without the R rating, but I'm glad they didn't. But
I'm glad they didn't either, because it opens up options for people.
Yeah.
And I think that saying that there can't be an R-rated film, superhero film that's a success, that also was just as false.
Yeah.
Because I think that you should not, you shouldn't box these things in. You shouldn't limit them and say they can only be this one thing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that it was a major success. I worry about future superhero movies feeling that they have to have an R rating now.
Yeah.
So that's my concern going forward. But
well, we'll talk about that
did a lot to redeem himself after that god awful train wreck that was the Green Lantern film.
Yeah, everybody gets a redemption.
No kidding.
Well. Yeah. We'll talk about that R rating here in a moment here, and I want to go, there's a lot of worries I've got, but on the same time, you know, again, we saw a great movie. We all had fun. It's Tim Coker, it's your turn. Tell us what you thought and all the other good stuff.
Well, I really liked it, and I, you know, as you guys know, I've been kind of a vocal pain in the ass about the Fox.
Come on, the Fox really?
Superhero movies lately. I know. How could I be a vocal pain in the ass to anything?
No.
But such is life. And I really liked this movie. I thought it was really funny. And I thought that it really kind of, honestly, I was expecting to just, I was hoping to not hate it, right? Because I thought probably it was going to be a little too brotastic, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that they really did a great job of trying to mitigate that. I thought that, you know, I don't think that he has like a sexy hooker girlfriend in the comics, does he?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I think is there to help the movie appeal to the female demographic that does love Marvel movies now, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, it definitely does. Just yesterday, I went to the doctor and the nurse that checked me in is somebody who's about my age, and she's always commented on if I have like a Marvel shirt on or something. She always comments on it because she's not a fan. She didn't grow up reading the comics, but she's fallen in love with the movies. And a lot of women have. And I think that they brought in that romantic subplot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whereas I really resented it in the Hobbit movies, it's all in how you handle it. And I thought that in this, they made her very uncouth and extremely welcome within the story. Like, I always felt like I was happy to see her when she was in the movie, and I thought that was really good, and it gave the movie a heart that it wouldn't
Absolutely.
Have had if it was just an hour and a half of dick jokes, you know.
Yeah.
So I really was kind of shocked at how much I enjoyed it, and I too worry a little bit about, you know, the precedent, because, you know, now a lot of idiots are going to be chasing, oh, we got to make it R-rated. But at the same time, if those are the caliber of people who are going to be making superhero movie X or Y, then that movie is in trouble anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think I don't think that that's going to stop too many great movies from being made. It's just going to help some lame ones get made. Maybe it'll be good for the Wolverine movie. You know, maybe he'll spend less time crying and more time actually acting like Wolverine.
Yeah. You know? I'm going to bring that up in the next discussion too. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they, you know, I just, like, Hugh Jackman, when he showed up in that cage match scene in the first X-Men movie, that was a revelation, and that guy was Logan for me. Like, I completely bought him, even if he was a little too tall and a little too good looking and whatever. I just bought him because he really sold that savagery and with that soulfulness. But I've seen him cry so many times that, you know, anyway, I'm sorry, we're not here to bitch about Wolverine, or as Deadpool says, sounds light or rhymes with Pulverine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was, I really was delighted. And I think that the market, as I said last week, that the market was ready for something that comments on and turns upside down the conventions of the superhero movie, because the superhero movie is such an established form now that people are ready and extremely familiar with it and ready to see somebody do a nimble job deconstructing it and serving it up with a laugh. And so I just, my hat's off to these guys.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you talked about, you know, that he doesn't have a love interest in the comics. No, but I take that back. He does. And she is hot and sexy, but she's death.
Yeah.
He's in love with death. And, you know, mainly because he can't die. In fact, there was a dark period during the comics where all he wanted to do was off himself, because nothing was, you know, he couldn't die. I mean, he even cut off his own head and put it in a microwave, and it still didn't die.
Wow.
And so, but yeah, there was a time where he and Death were dating. You know, I mean, I'm talking actual Death. I mean, of course, it's Marvel Comics version of Death, but she's a very hot chick, and they were dating. In fact, she was the one that finally killed him. They killed Deadpool off, but the fans didn't let that happen for long, kind of like they did Superman. And he came back to life, of course. But yeah, and that was the microwave scene. But yeah, I mean, there was a dark moment where that's all he wanted to do was die. And I was hoping they didn't go there yet, because that comes later. That's after he's been the merc with the mouth for a while. But yeah, He does have one girlfriend through the comics.
I do want to come out and say, though, that I think that, okay, yes, I'll admit that the Deadpool movie could have been made as a PG film, but I don't think that it would have been anywhere near the same movie. I mean, no. Here's the thing is the violence, the sexual jokes, the thing, all of that really contributed to make this movie stand out to me. If you'd cut back on the violence, cut back on the dick jokes, cut back on the innuendo, it might have been, I would have probably still liked it, but I wouldn't have loved it. And I did. I loved this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? And here's the thing. I think we all kind of really liked the movie. And one of the things, we all went in with lower expectations. I went into this movie expecting Van Wilder meets Green Lantern. And that's what I was expecting. Luckily, I got better. You know, the movie was way better than that. So,
and I love the dig at Green Lantern too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, the dig at Green Lantern, but also the constant digs at Pulverine. Like when he stapled the picture of Wolverine on his face when she pulled off the mask. I thought that was like the most laugh out loud moment in the movie.
Yeah.
That totally it surprised me. All the others, I almost saw the jokes coming.
That was so great.
But when that happened, I'm like, what? So, yeah.
Well, plus you have to stop and think, how long has he had that damn thing stapled under
his mask? Exactly.
Thinking logistically, he would have had to staple that dumb thing on like forever ago before the fight even started.
Yeah, yeah. And he went through the whole fight with that.
where does Bugs Bunny get the anvil? That's what they're going for.
Exactly. No, I totally get it, but it's still funny to think that he's been planning this dumb joke and sitting on this for so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, that's part of the humor is imagining him coming up with this gag and putting it into motion like a couple hours ago.
Yeah. Before he got the Hello Kitty backpack full of guns. So.
Yeah.
But well, and that's another thing about this whole movie is that the constant digs at all of the Marvel Universe. You know, not just the X-Men movies, but they even, like, that was a helicarrier that they're battling on at the end there, you know?
Yeah,
that's right.
And
nobody
like,
mentioned it, right?
I mean, there's all throughout all the whole movie, there's all sorts of different references to the entire Marvel Universe that it's like, you know, be damned, who cares who owns the license? We're going to talk about it because they're there. And I just thought that was a really nice add to this movie. It's like, not only are we going to talk about, you know, the obvious X-Men, but we're going to talk about everything else. To me, they pieced it together perfectly. There's been times in the comics where Deadpool has teamed up with different heroes. I think even there's a Deadpool Batman crossover comic somewhere. I think I remember seeing them. And I'd like to revisit that. I'll have to dig that out.
I think what
again.
It all boils down to, I think what we would all agree on this is that it really matters when the people making the film understand and respect the source material.
Yep, exactly.
And that makes all the difference in the world. It doesn't matter how good of a filmmaker you are. If you don't really give a shit about the source material, you're going to come up with a movie like Fanforstic. And,
Well,
and it's going to be ass, and everybody's going to know it.
Well, let me ask you this. We're talking on the last podcast about this being the director's first feature film. Did you think that made a difference, too?
I wasn't aware of that. Wow.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it really – it doesn't matter whether it's your first or 50th. If you are jaded about the source material and are embarrassed of it being a comic book movie, then you're going to make a shitty movie.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be clear to the people watching it that you don't – you're embarrassed that you're doing this. You know?
Right.
And if Ryan Reynolds was embarrassed at being this – goofy ass mangled person, it would have absolutely shown through in his performance.
Oh, but he embraced it from the very first moments. He embraced it.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear he gave himself over to this portrayal wholeheartedly, and I think it really showed. And I think that it's a credit to him as a performer that he was able to, you know, really inhabit this role without commenting on what he's doing as an actor.
Well, now, what you said about this being the director's first feature film, that's actually pretty interesting because, I mean, it felt so polished, but it reminds me...
It was swagger.
I agree.
It reminded me of James Gunn, who directed the Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're all looking forward to the next one coming up. He started off with Troma Films. Now, you've all seen at least one Troma film, right?
And we've met Lloyd Kaufman.
At least one.
Okay. Well, then you know that Troma is like no holds barred, nothing is sacred.
Yeah.
You know, everything thrown against the wall, whether it sticks or not, that's their method of making films. And he, you know, he was no different. He made several films for Troma, and I love them all. I believe he made my favorite Troma film, which was Tromeo and Juliet. But that movie made me realize that, hey, wait a second, they could actually make a legitimate non-exploitation movie if they wanted to do so, but that's not their thing. Mm-hmm. And then he comes on, he makes Slither, which is very different from anything he did with Troma. And it's a very funny and a very smart monster film, basically, for all intents – monster horror film for all intents and purposes. And then he goes from that to making you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a family-friendly film, but it's still got that kind of, I don't know, what's the word for it? That kind of unhinged, no-holds-barred attitude that he's just reining it in just enough to keep it in the PG-13 area. Mm-hmm. But you can feel it. The some of the jokes have a real innuendo to them that most kids aren't going to get, but we did as adults. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. And he posted something online that was, you know, just basically pleading with other filmmakers that just because Deadpool was successful with an R rating is not the green light for everyone to go out and make an R rated comic book film. And of anyone to write this article, James Gunn is the one to do it, because he made films that would like embarrass just about anyone, except for the diehard film goers like myself that are used to that kind of thing, and nothing offends me. And he made the transition to making this very commercial film. If he wanted to, he could have very easily made an R-rated Guardians of the Galaxy. But, you know, I don't know that anyone would have funded it. MCU No. would have, I'm sure, put their foot down on it. But the fact is, he could have gone that direction if he wanted to. But he didn't, because it's not really appropriate for the source material. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with – now Wolverine, they're talking about doing an R-rated Wolverine. And depending on how it's done, I basically in support of it, because here's the thing that has always bothered me about Wolverine in the movies is he's got these razor claws and he never really uses them. Yes, you see him fighting with them, but you don't see him eviscerating anyone with them. You don't see him like stabbing someone in the claws coming out their back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
a kebab probably, like Deadpool.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly like Deadpool. And that has always bothered me, because it's like, what's the point in having razor claws if you never really use them? So the idea of having an R-rated Wolverine movie is actually kind of appealing to me, especially since there was a character that was a total ripoff of Wolverine called Faust. Does anyone remember that? It was almost like an X-rated Wolverine. This guy sold his soul to the devil. He has razor claws, and he literally like slices all of his foes into little bitty pieces quite graphically. And it's also very, very filled with a lot of gratuitous sex with women with, you know, very unrealistic proportions. But I started reading it because I was like, okay, this is kind of like the Wolverine that I want to see, except it's not very well written and it goes way overboard on the sex and violence. But the idea of seeing like an actual Wolverine movie where he gets to use his claws and you actually get to see the damage that his claws can do, I'm into that if it's done right.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the one thing. That's what I wanted to bring up about the R rating is that, okay, yeah, they got a successful one with Deadpool. They've tried it before. I mean, we had Blade, Spawn. I think Spawn was – no, I think they cut that one back. Anyway, The Crow. I mean, those are all comic book-based movies that were R rated, but they weren't successful.
Was The Crow R rated?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it just wasn't successful. This shows that it can be done if done right. That doesn't mean that, oh, it's successful. That means we have to do the rest of them right. See, my worries are how many times are they going to... I mean, Deadpool is the only person I can think of in comic book world that can tell dick jokes. You know? He's the right. only one. You try to put that on any other character, you're going to totally ruin that character. Amazing Spider-Man, there should be no way ever that he's in an R-rated movie. No way. There is just impossible. Wolverine, I could see that, but only for the gore and the violence. You know, because that's just going to be happening. They can still, you know, they don't have to, though. They really don't have to. Now, as for the F word, I've never really been a huge fan of that. And, you know, people can use that all the time they want. I don't care. But is it appropriate in a comic book movie? It's not in books. No. You know, why do we need to add it? So, and that's the thing I worry about is that, okay, oh, look how successful Deadpool was. Well, that's the only one I could ever see off the top of my head. Now, Wolverine, like I said, with the violence, you could do that. And like you said, he has those claws. Use those. I mean, the worst thing I saw him do was cut off this part of the Statue of Liberty. I mean, like, come on. There's more you can do with that. You know, there's there's a few others out there. Like, Todd McFarlane's talking about doing another Spawn movie. I could see Spawn being R-rated. Spawn is a very, very dark story. Being, you know, selling his soul Malbogia, which is the equivalent of Satan.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that's dark. That's, you know, he makes some serious sacrifices. In fact, Spawn looks a lot like Deadpool. Anyway, so, yeah.
Well, McFarlane has always kept a very tight control over Spawn. And,
yeah.
And this is his idea to do another Spawn movie that's a very hard R movie. So,
yeah. Because that's the problem with the last one. The last one, he couldn't do a lot of the things that that should have been done. The whole Image comic line, I could see them doing a lot of Image comics R-rated. Like Witchblade, when they did the TV series, they totally ruined a lot of the Witchblade comics because they didn't let her go full-on Witchblade because it would be revealing.
Yeah, let's be fair. Nobody's that interested in those properties. I mean, none of those movies are ever going to have a wide audience.
True, but, I mean, those are the ones that could be done with an R-rating without...
They could be, but, I mean, I honestly... I don't know that they're hurting or helping themselves by doing an R rating versus a PG-13 because their audience is already going to be pretty small.
Right, right.
Well, maybe direct-to-video or Netflix movies.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That might be.
Yeah. Well,
and I'll tell you what I'd like to see is The Darkness. That I'd like to see a series or a movie on that. And that one could be that, because that one is kind of like a combination Witchblade and Deadpool and... I'm trying to think. A little bit of Doctor Strange thrown in, maybe a little bit. But
I've played the video games, and I like the character in the video games.
Yeah, and it's really cool. I think that one could do. But I'm just worried that, you know, the studio's like, oh my gosh, let's make Fantastic Four R-rated. We already ruined it once. Why not again? You know, because
at this point, I don't think anything would help that series.
Yeah, true. You know, let's show this invisible sex with Reed Richards and Sue Storm. You know, I mean,
that would be a bad fit.
It would horribly. You know, so I can't really think of any comic.
Let's not be too quick to judge this. That sounds hot. I want to get into it.
Watch out for the baby hand.
That might be a plus.
Tim's breaking out the baby hand.
It looks so big.
But no, I mean, honestly, I like that it was successful because I like Deadpool. I don't like that it's successful because it's R-rated. I just think, you know, it was successful. So, I don't know. I can't think of any comic book that I could say, you know, yeah, R-rated would make it work. So, what do you guys think on this whole R-rating thing?
I think it's important to throw this in here because I've got a quote from James Gunn, the James Gunn article pulled up. I'll just read it real quick because it's pretty short, and I think it sums up kind of what we're all kind of afraid of. It starts off with, quote, "I saw it happen with Guardians. It wasn't afraid to be fun or was colorful and funny, etc. And the next thing I know, I hear 100 film projects being set up, quote, like Guardians. And I see dozens of trailers exactly like the Guardians trailer with a big pop song and a bunch of quips. Deadpool wasn't that. Deadpool was its own thing. Mm-hmm. That's what the people are reacting to. It's original. It's a damn good. It's damn good. And it was made with love by the filmmakers. And it wasn't afraid to take risks." And I think that kind of sums up what we think about it.
Yeah,
at least it does for me.
Yeah.
And I think if the filmmakers are making a film and they're committed to it and they are telling the story that they want to tell, I don't care what it's rated. they can do whatever they want to if they're committed to the story.
Well, it's because the bean counters, the producers who have no artistic bone in their bodies, all they see are the bottom line. It's like, ooh, this movie made a lot of money. Let's do exactly what they did. But they're missing the point. The movie's not successful because it's R-rated. It's not successful because it's got ultra-violence. It's successful because it's true to the character and it's true to the universe. And that's the whole point that seems to be going over the heads of most producers. It's like, you know, people don't want a carbon copy of Guardians of the Galaxy. They want to see something different. They want to see something they've not seen before, which is why Guardians of the Galaxy was so much fun.
And in turn, Deadpool.
Absolutely. They want that feeling of discovery that, oh my gosh, I'm feeling something here.
And I think
he's right when he, you know, we talked about this on a previous podcast, the big offender that comes up in for me when we're talking, this quote from James Gunn is being talked about, is the Suicide Squad trailer. That's a trailer that is so inspired by the Guardians trailer.
Yeah.
It wants to be the Guardians so badly, even though the movie is 100% not going to be like that.
Yeah, I don't see how it could be.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Eric Billingsley, you put it correctly. It's the bean counters, unfortunately, that are running Hollywood. I mean, that was case in point was when we were talking to Eric Gubelman last week and his talking about how box office is ruled by the numbers and, you know, what the movies are going to do regardless of how good they are. And I think, you know, that's the problem is hopefully they won't look at this that way and they'll get enough of the fan reaction to say, yeah, they loved the character. That's why it was there. So, Tim Coker, what do you think of the whole R rating issues?
Well, you know, it's a gimmick. Either it's a gimmick or it's a valid choice, and in the case of Deadpool, it was definitely a valid choice. I think that we're going to get some hot garbage dumped in our faces at some point. That's you know, not really. That's just a you know. Okay, here's what I'm really thinking of. Right, and I don't want to say it, but you guys remember when Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction came out and blew everybody's mind, and then suddenly there's a bunch of shitty movies like Killing Zoe and whatever, everybody is making one smart talking pop culture quoting gun guy thing after another. We're going to get some very misguided attempts at, you know, at catching the lightning in a bottle a second time. But I don't think it's ever going to be something that dominates the superhero movie market because, you know, in the end, you still want kids to buy the T-shirts and the toys and the Happy Meals and all the other merch that is the real, you know, financial driver of these franchises. So I'm not afraid of it taking over. I just think that we're going to probably get, you know, some gimmicky movies that aren't great. And hopefully the door will be open for filmmakers that do have a valid R-rated vision to come in and blow our minds.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the one thing. I did miss my Deadpool Happy Meal. I'm upset about that. But I will say this. You know, I'm not sponsored by Hardee's or anything, but I walked into Hardee's and they had a big, huge placard of Deadpool. You know, Deadpool coming to theaters February 12th, you know, and I'm like, holy cow, that's cool. And I kept looking around. Where's the merch? Where's the merch?
I would love to see what kind of themed meal that they would come up with.
It's an avocado burger.
It's nothing but like kids' toys. It's sex toys disguised as kids' toys. That would be awesome.
And you know what? Here's the thing. You know, with Deadpool being as popular now because of the movie. Well, before that, Deadpool was extremely popular. Case in point is all the cosplay you see at all these Comic Cons all over the place.
Oh, dear God.
You see if you don't see Deadpool at a Comic Con, something's wrong. And
I gotta say, if they ever outlawed Deadpool and Harley Quinn cosplay, there wouldn't be any cosplay.
Exactly. That goes to show you that Deadpool was popular before the movie, and the merch was out there. In fact, Walmart had Deadpool T-shirts for like a last year, and Isaac and I would, you know, we'd pick up one here and there and say, wow, I can't wait for the movie. And when the movie came out, I didn't see a single Deadpool T-shirt or anything at Walmart, and I'm kind of upset about that.
But didn't you have this feeling? I had this feeling, and I'm talking early in the movie. I'm saying before the freeze frame fly around at the very beginning of the movie was over, and I realized, like, at that point, I already knew that I was in safe hands with this movie, you know, and I was watching it thinking, wow, the days of Deadpool being a fringe character that only people who go to conventions know about are over.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just like that, you know? Yeah. And it's quite a thing to see a character just suddenly get turned on as – and I guess it's the same thing with, you know, Groot and whatever, where you see a character and you're like, wow, okay, well, a lot of people who never heard of this character now have. It's
yeah,
just
exactly.
one of those funny things.
And well, you know, and I mean, as a comic book nerd at that point, I felt justified, though. You know, it's like,
yeah,
all this I've been trying to tell you people.
So we've got gloating rights for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, yeah. And again, if the R rating, we know for a fact it's going to turn out they're going to churn out some crap because of this success of the R rating Deadpool. I just know it's going to happen. Probably is going to happen from Sony. I'm just thinking. But again, I hope they listen. Spider-Man, nowhere near R. You don't even have to approach the R. It doesn't have to be.
Relatively safe.
Yeah, I don't see anyone saying, oh, we need an R-rated Spider-Man movie. I don't see that happening.
I can see, R-rated Superman? No.
Yeah, I can see them being tempted by that action.
Yeah, DC movies, they could probably. An R-rated Wonder Woman? Okay, I'll go see that. Don't get me wrong.
You know what they're doing? They're probably all kicking themselves. Why didn't we make Suicide Squad rated R?
Oh, you know they are.
Yeah.
They are wishing that they could have caught, you know, they wish that they could copycat this now instead of Guardians.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it really is that this is the boring part to talk about, but the marketing team for Deadpool can't be commended highly enough.
100%.
Because they knew what they were doing. Knew what they were doing. And it just embarrasses the marketing team for Suicide Squad because they clearly do not know what type of film they're marketing or they're afraid of the type of film they're marketing.
Yeah. And 100%. If that marketing team behind Deadpool they blew it out of the water. I mean, they knew what they were doing. They must have been fans themselves. Either that or Ryan Reynolds made them read comic books or something. I don't know what happened there, but they totally
I've never seen a company from top to bottom just have such a handle on what they're doing with the property.
Yeah. Well, how long ago did the whole controversy about whether Deadpool was going to be R-rated or PG-13 rated, how long ago did that start? That's been like over a year, seems like.
Well, I remember there's a big promo trailer thing went out that Mario Lopez, he's like interviewing Ryan Reynolds, and he goes, now with the R rating, how's that going to happen? I mean, why are you? Do you think you're making a mistake there? And then the next thing you know, Deadpool walks behind him and chops off his head, and his head goes rolling, and he goes, there's no way we can do it otherwise. So I loved that. I mean, that was about a year ago that came out.
Yeah, it's been going on a while.
Yeah, so they knew it, and they knew that they had to, I guess. So, I was worried.
That discussion's been happening since they first started making Wolverine stuff.
That's true.
Because that's the other character that's the obvious choice for an R rating.
Yeah.
And so when they first talked about making an X-Men film or a standalone Wolverine film, everybody was talking about, is it going to be rated R?
Okay, well, hopefully they will, again, listen to James Gunn at least. If not us, at least they'll listen to James Gunn. So, you know, he's got a little more pull than the Nerd Up podcast. Well, not that much more.
I don't know. We're awfully influential.
I think so. Hey, we called it on the last podcast saying that Deadpool is going to go over 100 million, and the guy that owns a theater said only 60. But thank you, Eric Gubelman, for letting us feel good for a while. All right, well, let's talk about Tim Coker. You brought up one topic that you wanted to bring up today, and we can close out the show with this because you've discovered something, and well, just go ahead and share. Talk about what you wanted to talk about.
I think that, you know, anybody who's nerdy enough to be listening to this podcast probably has at least heard of the concept of the fan re-edit or fan remaster or whatever. There's a not terribly long-standing but extremely noble tradition. Well, some usually noble, often noble, sometimes noble tradition of fans taking the law into their own hands and editing movies to their own taste. And you know, you get sometimes you'll get something that is completely bananas, like the person that took about half of Superman 3 and about half of Superman 4 and put it together into one attempt at a better movie than either. You know, but then you have other people who are just trying to get to the best version of a movie that has not been well served on home video. And I think the most perverse possible choice for a movie that has not been well served on home video has got to be the original Star Wars, because as all good-hearted people know, it is still not possible to watch a quality version of the original Star Wars on Blu-ray, because all you get is the version with CGI and Muppets, the special edition. And that's a big sore point for me. And a lot of fans feel the same, and some have done outstanding jobs over the years sort of taking the special edition stuff out and trying to restore the film as close as possible to its original theatrical form. And for the last couple of years, the king of that particular mountain, I would say, is a guy named Harmy, H-A-R-M-Y, and you can look up his videos on YouTube if you're interested. He made something called the Despecialized Edition. And his trick with this was to take the Blu-ray release of each movie, and then what he did was he fixed the color, because the color is completely out of whack on those. So he fixed the color on them, and wherever there is special edition content, even if it's just in part of the frame, he would mask out that part of the frame and replace it from whatever the best source he had was for the original movie. And so when you watch it, you get to enjoy the HD Star Wars experience without being stressed out constantly about when the next sassy CGI robot thing is going to show up or whatever. So, like, anyway, this is a long intro for what my new discovery is. And the new discovery is a new fan restoration of the first Star Wars. And it's called the Star Wars, the Silver Screen Experience. And these guys went completely the other direction. Instead of taking the existing HD transfer and trying to fix what's wrong with it, what they did is they tracked down a very nice print of the original film from Spain, of all places, that had not faded much, and they exhaustively went through it and color timed it to look like the original prints did, clean up the dirt as much as possible, but to retain the film grain and to try to keep it looking like film prints did in the 70s. And I hadn't really thought about it, because a long time has passed between then and now. And when I watch the despecialized editions, I'm just delighted, because they look fantastic. And you can see every pore on Alec Guinness's aging face, you know, and all this stuff. It's great. But I also have very particular memories. I don't know if it's because I'm an artist and I'm very visually oriented, but I have extremely clear memories of what the movies looked like when I was a kid. I think I saw it probably 5 times in the theater, you know, between 77 and 80 or 81. What's great about this is when I watch it, I can't describe it, but it is the strangest feeling of nostalgia to actually see Star Wars looking like Star Wars before it was called Episode 4, before it was called A New Hope, you know. And all four of us are old enough to remember when Star Wars was just a movie called Star Wars. And right. when you put this in, you have a beautiful, you know, 1080p picture of Star Wars as it was seen in the 70s, and I'm in love with it. It's great. I think that the despecialized editions will still be the go-to overall, but for this very particular experience, it's a glass of fine wine, my friends.
Now, I want to say that by no means are we at Nerd Up Podcast, you know, saying, hey, this is the greatest thing, better than Star Wars, because we don't want Disney suing us. So I just want to say
bring
that.
Your lawyers on. I don't care. I will scream at the mountaintops.
Garbage.
They are absolute garbage. They're a garbage fire that does more to ruin Star Wars than anything short of Darth Vader falling to his knees and going, no.
You got me on that one, true.
Yeah, I think the special editions are just peeing on his legacy, to be honest. And honestly, this I don't feel bad in encouraging people to seek this out. And I really think you should. If you love Star Wars, you really ought to look this up, because it is something special, because they're not making this available for people to watch. And I think that's horrible. I mean, this is part of our culture. I think Star Wars is culturally significant enough that this is something that's important to preserve from their creator's hands, to be honest. I think George Lucas does not understand his legacy.
Well, he did those prequels, so he definitely doesn't understand his...
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and as a filmmaker and as creative people, we're all creative people, sometimes you're your own worst judge of your material.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're your worst critic. Every time you're on stage and you're performing and you come off stage, you're like, well, that was hot garbage. And then you go out, talk to the people that saw the show, and they f***ing loved it. They're like, oh, you're great. It was wonderful. And you're like, oh, no, that was awful. A lot of times you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to your own work.
Yeah, the distance. That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, you know, and here's the thing. You know, Disney could easily, since they now own Star Wars, they could easily slap these guys a couple hundred thousand dollars or whatever. It would be no big deal to them. Buy these and then release them, you know?
Well, to be honest, I mean, they have the stuff to do this release of their own.
True.
I know Disney that there are prints available.
Disney does not, though.
What?
But they're out there.
There are prints out there. There are prints out there, and I refuse to believe that George Lucas actually threw out the original negative and didn't take care of it. Look at how well sorted the Lucasfilm archive has been from day one, there's no way he threw that out. Well, okay, he's perverse enough that he might have, but I kind of don't believe it.
I know.
But Fox owns the rights to the first Star Wars movie and will forever. I mean, in 2020, Empire and Jedi revert back to Lucasfilm and therefore to Disney, and they could conceivably put it together then. But without Disney and Fox being willing to share the pile of money, it's very hard to see how something like this will ever happen legally.
Right.
And we all know how much Fox loves to play nice with other studios.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, I think that that's why I have no reservations about recommending this, because this is a game that they are very determinedly not participating in. So, hey, fine. We'll take our ball and go elsewhere, you know?
Exactly.
Now, I did want to jump out here and say, and if any of you guys know anything about the legal ramifications of all this, because I don't understand any of it, but there is a huge, and I mean massive, community of fan edits out there. There's a couple of different websites, which I don't have at hand right now. But if you go to these websites, just the list of movies that have fan edits is mind-boggling. Some of these movies, like Alien 3, which was, you know, controversial because they fired David Fincher and did their own edit. I think that I saw that movie alone has something like six different fan edits. It's insane the number of edits that some of these films have. Now, it's just I don't have the time or the motivation to go through and download most of these. But this one that you guys are talking about, the Silver Screen Experience, I definitely want to see that. But people who don't know about this would be shocked if you just do a web search for fan edits, and you'll come across at least one of these sites. And it's just absolutely amazing how much is out there, and apparently it must be legal. Otherwise, how would all these things be out there and not in the, you know, the sites not be shut down by, you know, the studios?
It's not really legal, but I mean, it's something that they just, to be honest, actually, George Lucas is one of the most friendly people to fan editing, because there are so many Star Wars fan films out there and fan edits of things that Lucasfilms has really turned a blind eye to over the years. And I think it mostly comes down to just benign turning away, you know, from companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that they really see this as hurting their bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Well, no one's charging anything. They're all free.
Right. Yeah. It energizes the fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know what kind of fans have this time to do this. Don't they have real jobs and real world and things like that going on?
Well, some of the people that do this type of thing end up getting jobs, or actually are people that already work in the film industry. Like there was, I'm sure you guys saw it, Topher Grace did a re-edit of the Star Wars prequels to make them watchable films.
Topher Grace did?
Yes, that was a huge thing. You know, you can't watch that cut. That cut's never been released, but there were like so many articles written about this secret screening that he did because he was interested in being a director and editor, and so he did this as his little project and then was pleased with the results, and so he showed it to a bunch of Hollywood people who immediately started talking about it being amazing.
Hmm.
And so these things are done by people of all stripes, from just dudes in their basement with their computer to people who are quite sophisticated employees of the film industry.
Well,
any way you do it, it's a lot of work. I mean,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it really is.
You have to have some passion in there somewhere.
They can be entertaining, though. I have to say, you know, if a good one can really be quite nice. But well, you know, then there are some where you're like, well, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Well, I've got some that I've downloaded and burned to DVD, and they sit on my shelf alongside the original movie because I think they're interesting enough. What they did with it was interesting enough that I want to hang on to it.
Maybe you'll have to share your list with me off air sometime, because I'd be interested to hear what your opinions are, or which ones you liked.
Sure, and to be honest, I do my best. I think it's important too to support the film industry. So, you know, if I have a fan edit of something, I buy the original too. So I am supporting the content, the people who made the content. So, but I'm enjoying it in a manner that I want to enjoy it. I think that that's important to do both.
Well, do you think we can get a fan edit of the Fantastic Four movie that actually makes it not suck?
It's only credits.
Yes. okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much right.
Well, to be honest, the one that I actually see now while we're talking, I have fanedit.org pulled up and I'm just kind of browsing around here. The one that jumps out at me that I actually think I might watch now is someone's edited the three Hobbit films down into two films. And to me, I think that's doing God's work by they may have yeah.
There have been a few of those that I downloaded one of them called The Tolkien Edit. And I was, you know, where the guy tried to basically cut out all of the invented subplots and also cut out all of the basically just focus on Bilbo and the dwarves. But I don't think he went far enough, frankly. You know, I think that there is still like a solid hour that could have been taken out. So when I watched it, I was like, wait a minute. The whole crazy barrel ride is still in here where they're all unkillable badasses suddenly for 10 minutes until they're not again.
Yeah. And so, where physics absolutely stops working completely.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's the point that he said, you know, I'm kind of tired. I've been working on this for hours. I'm going to let this one slide.
Right.
That right there speaks to, you know, individual opinion. To that person that did the edit, he thought that that actually added something to the film, whereas any sane person would say, no, it does not. But that's what's beautiful about fan edits, is that you can pretty much find one that suits your taste, especially if it's an incredibly popular film or series like Tolkien's films. You know, you can find one that keeps in and throws out the stuff that you really want.
Right.
Well, all right. Well, I tell you what, we're running out of time here. It's time to end the podcast because, you know, we got things to do. I'm going to go try to see Deadpool again tonight. Even if it's by myself. Everybody around the house is sick. I'm going to go by myself and get away from these sickos. And so I got things to do. But in the meantime, I got to point out all sorts of ways to support the podcast. We've had lots of fans support the podcast in many different ways.
Yay, fans!
Exactly.
Yay, fans!
And I like the way, to me, buy a t-shirt. You know, we don't get much money out of the t-shirts, but you get a lifelong enjoyment of wearing a t-shirt with the Nerd Up podcast on the front of it. I'm telling you, you get fans yourself when you do that. You'll have, well,
and it's a little known fact that it's incredibly powerful at attracting.
I think it puts pheromones.
Yeah. Yeah, the shirts are made out of raw pheromones. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, support the podcast, buy some t-shirts, buy some merchandise. You know, we love to see you wear our swag. And, you know, at the same time, it helps us out and keeps us going and, you know, lets us know that you're out there, if nothing else. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, please go on there, rate and review us. And if you want, you know, we'll read your reviews on the air. And also, if you want to, you can leave us a voicemail message at nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. And there's a voicemail tab. You can just record your own message. We'll play that on the air if you want. We've done it a couple times in the past, and we would just love to hear your opinion about everything. But the main thing is we need to get some rates and reviews on the iTunes. We've got enough subscribers on there, but we need enough rates and reviews because I want to see what you guys think. So go ahead and do that.
Do we have an email address?
Oh, well, we got a Twitter account.
Okay.
It's at NerdUpPodcast. But maybe I should set up an email address. Maybe one of these days I will. Yeah. It's not like it's hard to do.
So, isn't it funny, though, that email is really considered to be old school now?
I know, right? Like, do you tweet?
That's something.
But, there's all sorts of ways to get in contact with us as well. In fact, if you want to get in contact with us individually, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
Eric Billingsley, I'm at Eric Bill.
Tim Coker, I am at Tim K. Has to Say.
Tim Matson is at Tim Gone Mad.
And, if you want to reach us on AOL, no, you can't do that because we're not old school.
We're at yourgrandma@AOL.com.
So,
don't we have a MySpace account? Come on, guys.
Yeah, get with the times.
So, all sorts of ways to get in touch with us. And, of course, speaking of which, we have a Facebook page. You can go like that for sure. And get in touch with us in any way. We'd like to hear your feedback and know what you're thinking. And let us know if any future topics you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, or maybe you'd like to join in on. In the meantime, though, that's it for the show this time around. Like we say every single week,
stay nerdy.
Nerd up.
Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew. I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. Again, 800-917-8611.